Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. We welcome you again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720. Hello to all. This is Milton Rosenberg.
We'll talk about that tonight on Extension 720.
Chicago 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Extension 720, with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Maybe a little bit thereafter. As we kind of lead into Campo being Kaz, and of course, Carms, in the postgame of Chicago Bears tonight, playing Monday Night Football against the Washington Redskins. It's the name of the team. I don't know how that's still the name of the team. I feel like somewhere along the line in our national discourse about how we name our football and basketball and baseball teams, the idea of that, I think we can all agree, offensive term, just went, tradition. tradition. And we just forgot about it. Like they paid enough money for us to just wholly forget about it. We moved on to other things like kneeling, things like that, quickly. So I'm just going to call them the Washington DCs. How about that? I like that.
That
Washington
sounds great.
DC, right? The Washington DCs and the Chicago Bears. Tonight on Monday Night Football, the injury bug somewhat hitting the Chicago Bears tonight. Eddie Pinheiro, who the ESPN has decided to curse by doing a bunch of human interest pieces on all day, including tonight in the broadcast, talking about where he's from and where he came from and his story. He hurt his knee in a minor injury while lifting weights, which I don't know about you, but the last thing I want from my kicker is for a guy to be jacked, right? We had that. We had Todd Sauerbrunn. Remember, he used to roll up the sleeves to show his pads, and he can really kick the ball, and he's tough. He's got guns. No. I'm much more of a Brad Maynard. I want my kickers to be small and thin and out of shape, and all they do is kick the ball. He's injured, and he looks like he's going to play. They spent a lot of time on his pregame workout, which included a lot of grimacing and limping. So maybe a two-point conversion-type night for the Chicago Bears. Also, Bobby Massey, who is the starting right tackle who was not on the injury report, showed up sick. He's ill, too ill to play. So he's out, and journeyman right tackle, and I forget his name, is not in front, right in front of me, who Twitter quickly said is not good. That's all I remember when I just glanced at it. He is in his place playing right tackle tonight. Chicago Bears out in Washington. But that's okay. You know what? We will have updates all night. Jen DeSalvo's here, and she will have you covered on what is happening on the Bears game. That's really all you need to know. It's what the score is.
Just the score.
Maybe if you're a fantasy football player, you're interested in the individual accomplishments and the points that would come from that. And we got you covered on that. You don't need the ins and outs. It's kind of the problem I have right now with my brother. Jen, you like this. My brother is, he's a Bears fan, but he lived out in California for the last couple of years.
Okay.
And so he didn't get access to the Bears games. He wasn't able to get them. So instead he watched the Red Zone channel, which is the NFL kind of whip around where every time a team gets close to the Red Zone, they show it. It's great broadcast. One of the best shows in television history.
Wait, like a cable?
Yeah, it's an NFL network. And so you watch, it's an unbelievable way to watch football because it just jumps from game to game and only shows the action. So all the third down and six, incomplete pass, he's going to punt. You don't see any of that.
Yeah.
You just kind of move on. It's great. But the problem is he's moved back to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he wants, I'm very excited to watch a game, just like in our childhood, we watch games together. But he is over the experience of watching a full football game. He has been spoiled, millennial, spoiled by the concept of the Rock'em Sock'em. You know, every play is an action play, and he is not interested in watching the minutiae and the first, seconds, and third downs of a normal football drive. He only wants to see the score.
I have a theory, and this may be completely crushed. No, is he an athlete at all? Does he participate in any type of sport or activity that he does regularly?
Maybe not regularly. Maybe golf. He might be a golf guy. He could play basketball, but I would say he's less of an athlete than
okay.
it needs to be.
Because I find myself not able to sit and watch any type of sports game, any type of musical. I just can't sit for like 3 hours at a time because I am an athlete. And so I want to be active in doing something.
So you think he might have he's like, I got to get up. I got to be active.
Yeah. I just want to see the highlights and get it over with.
No, there is the thing that has not changed is the couch. He is firmly implanted on the couch.
What's he do on a night like tonight when this is the only game in town?
Yeah, I would think he'd be watching a game like this.
Does he watch the Red Zone channel? And it's just the guy vamping until they get to the 20?
It's a very boring show with the Bears, right? It'd be like, well, nothing really. Punt, another punt. Snow gets a good point. I last week I watched the Broncos game with him and his friends and... And I had to say, it was really hard to concentrate because there wasn't, because every commercial they flipped to the Red Zone or he didn't want to watch it and they were making fun of me every time there was a bad play, like a 3rd and 6 running play. I became the butt of the joke of, this is what we want to watch, you know, like a 1 yard gain, which is, again, a lot in a Bears game. So I felt like I was kind of on the outside looking in. Like there was a real pressure from the entire room, not just my brother, to watch the Bears through Red Zone. It's just hard for me to believe. I feel I'm a guy who wants to sit down and watch the full game.
I assume they're all fantasy football players as well, too, because there's where my interest in the Red Zone channel is that I got my guys. I wanted to see how they're scoring.
Right. Yeah, no, it has to be. There are computer screens up. There are phones out.
Yeah.
There's so many ancillary products and competitions happening around football on any given Sunday now. It's not even about the game. The game is the source, and they've created 19,000 different games to play around it.
The Cubs game, I went to the Cubs game on Saturday.
Ooh!
And
Were the people who sat next to you bring the ribs?
No, with the Ribbian rhubarb? No, we had a successful season. We didn't see a Cubs victory, but we didn't have to see
no
any ribs. A couple of weeks ago, somebody had written a piece about how baseball's boring and watch the U.S. Open. It's 4 hours of, you know, there's something happening all the time. And I was like, yeah, this guy's got a good point. But, you know, I love baseball. I love the minutia of baseball. Oh, man, that game was so long. Here comes Joe Maddon with a long walk out to replace they were replacing pitchers starting the 5th inning. I'm like, it was like 5 hour game.
Yeah, there's a limit. There's a limit to enjoying the national pastime and being like soaking in
tough.
And being patient and
being
like being
there.
What a great moment to be here among fans and just breathe it in. All right, let's go. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And when they've gotten past, and I don't even think they do this at Wrigley. It's the only place they don't. But when they've gotten past all the donut races, the sausage races, they have no more races. They can't. They have to think of new things to put on the scoreboard. It's going to be a taco race.
If I have to see the Legends of the Game video one more time, that's the only thing the Cubs have. And the Orange Theory Fitness ad. They don't even do any fun games.
No, they don't. They don't. We got a great show lined up. We're going to get to it. Coming up, we got, you know what I'll do? I'll take a break here so we stay on time. And we come back, I want to sort of tee up what we have tonight on Extension 720. We're excited. We have some great stuff to talk about, stuff that's happening today in Chicago, but also stuff that you need to know about, including some Chicago history. So that's coming up on Extension 720 tonight. Stay with us. Extension 720 with you here on 720 WGN. Going until a little after 10 o'clock when Hampo, B, and Cos will take over. 312-981-7200. We'll try to keep your mind off football if you're not interested in football. If you're like me who thought maybe, perhaps, just maybe, I would tape the game and watch it later. It's impossible to do that at a news, weather, traffic, and sports station like WGN. I found out the hard way when we tried to do that on opening night against the Packers. I was like, you know what? If I just maybe turn the volume down on the news and the sports report, but I don't know.
You still went back the next day and watched the film.
Yeah, I'm going to watch
the film. You broke
it down. Oh, I'm going to break it down. I'm going to break it down tonight. When I get home, just start again.
Wow.
Like I said, I'm a big fan of the 3rd and 4 plays. You know, 2nd and 7. I'm a big 2nd and 7 guy. What Red Zone doesn't show is how, and I think this is just, it's in the water in Chicago, but it doesn't show how dominant a defense can be. So, you know, it's all offense. And, you know, that means that you're not going to see a lot of Chicago Bears. What I want to see is that 2nd and 9 running play that gets snuffed out, and you see an amazing play by Khalil Mack or, you know, Roquan, whatever. That's what I would like to see. Coming up, Jeremy Gorner's going to join us. Jeremy Gorner, one of the great Chicago reporter, Chicago Tribune reporters, who is all over this case on Michael Blackmon. Now, this is a case that came out at the end of last week, and it was crazy at the beginning because he was on a bicycle and he shot somebody at lunchtime in broad daylight, one shot, and they had video and they showed it all over the news, I think on Friday night. It was crazy. It was just like, wow, who does that? And there were a lot of thoughts about where this was. It was lunchtime. It's this Loop, West Loop, the river, Fulton River District. Where was this? And then to find out on the weekend, you know, as you don't pay attention as much to the news and you check your phone or you check it out, that the police went to his house. They got some idea where he lived. And he was able to escape, and he shot a police officer. He was on the run. There was another gun battle later. The police shot him again. I believe he was shot over 4 times. So at the end of the day, he was arrested, of course, but still, and this is what I want to talk to Jeremy about, because today the Chicago police, of course, had a big press conference talking about the case and what they were charging him with, but it still has not really gotten to why this happened in the first place. There are a lot of unanswered questions about what the motive is. They say he was a Jimmy John's delivery guy, and perhaps one of the, and speculation that he had an issue with the security desk at this woman's building, which seems like a stretch when it comes to why you would, you know, put out a hit essentially on somebody, one bullet and a hit. So we'll talk with Jeremy about this, because I think trying to get to the bottom of how this, and I also have questions with Jeremy, and I'm not at all an expert on policing and how you go, but they talked about in the articles that I read just this idea of fugitive apprehension units. This idea that there are units in the Chicago Police Department whose job it is to go and find, to apprehend the criminals at large. I just thought that was policing in general. But there are actual units that do this. And they were the ones that approached the house, and it was one of the officers as part of that unit that was shot and wounded. So I want to talk about that. I'm not familiar with that, because it does seem to me, and I want to talk about this with Jeremy, it doesn't, I mean, how many times have we seen, countless times we've seen on the news where someone has barricaded themselves in a house and there's a SWAT team outside and there's 30 or 40 officers and they kind of play the waiting game. As opposed to this story where they just kind of knocked on the door and he went out the back door and he was able to, you know, shoot a police officer. I feel like, why wasn't that kind of experience, the SWAT experience, applied to what happened on Saturday morning? Again, we'll talk to Jeremy coming up after 7:30. A little bit later in the show, we'll talk about Working Nation. This is a group that is really, they have invested. They've invested a ton of money. Let's just put it this way. A venture capitalist out in California said, we need to find a way to talk about this issue because this issue is more important than Americans even think about. And that has to do with the future of work and jobs. No matter what politicians tell you, and they're going to tell you on the campaign trail that they're going to bring jobs to this state or whatever, it just, the numbers are striking that the future of work and the fact that most of our manual jobs are becoming automated, it's happening. It's started. Anyone who knows, who's worked in that field, who has been downsized or laid off because of robotics, AI, automation, they will tell you it has started. And I'm not sure that America is paying close attention to the fact that jobs as we know it have changed. So how do we keep up? How do we be able to provide for our families and have jobs if there are none available? And I don't mean unemployment, and I don't mean someone, you know, oh, I got laid off, I got to find a new job, there are no jobs available. We're talking about how the idea of work. This is something we could talk to Professor Al Genie about. But this idea of you know, what we knew as a job is just gone. And it's happening now.
AM radio is still cool, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah, for now. Although I can see a future where Pete Zimmerman is automated. I can see Pete being like, let me tell you about how someone leaves eggplants on my, you know, that kind of thing. They leave it on my doorstep. And I'll be like, thanks, Robot Pete. Right? I had a funny bit one time where I had created at a different radio station a robot talk show host. And I had, we made it out of an old reel-to-reel machine. And we kind of were joking around. We put like mustache and we encased it. We had like this sort of museum glass. And so we put it behind, right behind where the host sat. And then we put a little sign in saying, in case of emergency, break glass. Robot talk show host will take over. It's kind of making fun of the fact that, you know, you were more and more automation was happening in radio. And it sat there unknown to the radio station management for over a year. It just was there. And no one ever made any reference to it. No one, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like they're like, eh, let me explain this joke. Until one day the general manager was walking through with, I think, with funders or, you know, people who, some sort of investment project. And someone asked about it. And the general manager was like, I have no idea what this is. And the next day, like, the operations manager or the building manager is like, hey, come here. You can take that out of there. It was like, I swear, it was like 14 months later. Take that out. What are you doing? Like, I didn't, it was just, I was just one of the guys. I didn't have all the things to do with it. So there I am taking a reel-to-reel machine, taking a mustache off a reel-to-reel machine. It's a good bit. So immature. But we'll talk about the future work. Also coming up, we are going to continue with John Schmidt, our resident historian, as we go out to different spaces around Chicago as part of his Hidden Chicago Landmark book. It's a great book. We're going to talk about Logan's Tomb in Grant Park. Except the issue is, you know the statue. It's kind of where the hippies in 1968 were hanging off of it. It's the statue of General Logan. The issue is that he's not buried there. He's supposed to be. It's Logan's tomb, but it never happened. We'll talk about that with John Schmidt. And also, hip-hop performance later in the 9 o'clock hour with Save Money's Tokyo, who's got new music, and we'll talk with him coming up. So lots to do tonight, so let's get to it. It's Extension 720, so stay with us. Thanks, Jen. It's Extension 720, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, the future of work. Have that conversation about automation and what it means for all of us human beings, not just in this country, but around the planet. And we'll talk a little Chicago history and who's buried in General Logan's tomb in Grant Park. Hint, it's not General Logan. John Schmidt takes us there, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Well, it's become a national story here in Chicago, the bizarre and terrible story of Michael Blackman, a former delivery man who has been accused now of shooting a Chicago police officer and a woman while riding his bike. A single shot seemed very, I don't know what you call it, very mob-like, very hitman-like. Jeremy Gorner joins me on the line. He's a crime reporter for Chicago Tribune. What a bizarre story this has become here in Chicago. Jeremy, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Sure thing, Justin.
So let's talk about this story, because the Chicago police had a press conference today, and they talked a little bit about it. But, you know, at the beginning of this story, it was just about a guy who shot somebody in broad daylight at lunchtime, and this turned into so much more. But what did the police say about a motive when it comes to why this guy shot the woman in the first place?
Well, unfortunately, Justin, he chose not to speak with police after he was shot and arrested on Saturday. So right now the police, you know, the police don't know, because he's not, because Michael Blackman's not talking to them. The closest thing they had to a motive, one of the police officials speculated that it was because of Blackman's previous employment. He used to work at a Jimmy John's sandwich shop, and he used to deliver sandwiches to the building where the woman who was wounded in last week's shooting works. So he used to deliver sandwiches there. So security in that building was familiar with him. And, you know, according to police, you know, Blackman used to give security at this building a hard time. I guess they would always ask him for an ID. He wouldn't present an ID. He would, you know, not have, you know, any phone numbers for people who he's delivering sandwiches to. So these were apparently all red flags to the security staff in the building where this woman worked. And according to police, he got fired from Jimmy John's in May. But, you know, obviously, according to police, he came back to the area last week and, you know, shot this woman as she was leaving that same building. So police are purely speculating that, you know,
right,
his familiarity, you know, with that building and that area may have led him to that area. But as far as why he shot that particular woman, no one really knows. I mean, the police said that she did not know him, and it's looking like she was a random victim right now.
And that's, I mean, that's, you've covered this for a long time. You covered crime and obviously to Chicago violence. This, do you see the Chicago police speculate like this? I mean, they seem to be pulling out straws like the rest of us.
No, it is pretty rare for them to do that. And but again, you know, this crime itself is pretty rare. I mean, you know, as far as even, you know, for violent crimes in the city, you know, just to kind of tell you that, you know, when this happened last week at, you know, in the Fulton River District over there in downtown area, you know, he was wearing all dark clothing. So there was a lot of speculation on social media about, like, because this was such a brazen attack, that's a high visibility area, happened in the middle of the day, who would do something like this? And you had people speculating on social media that maybe he was the same guy who shot and killed two people randomly in Rogers Park last year.
Right.
And so that dominated Twitter. and then there was also a shooting that happened June 8th in Lakeview, just north of Diversity Avenue on Broadway, another pretty safe area where you don't really hear about a lot of shootings, you know, rarely. There was a woman who was shot there by a gunman on a bike. So without even asking the question today, the first deputy superintendent, Tony Riccio, today brought up Rogers Park and basically said, we've ruled that out as a connection, but we haven't ruled out the shooting in Lakeview. You know, I mean, apparently the same gun that was used in the shooting of the woman last week and of the police officer, the ballistics match, but the ballistics match only those two shootings, not the one in Lakeview, but they're still not ruling out that maybe he had something to do with that, you know, perhaps with a different gun.
Yeah.
So that's still not over and done with.
Now, technology's played a huge role here in at least getting to the point of knowing who this man was, just because there was footage that came forward from a bike shop where he got his tire fixed. But also the police were able to use a lot of different cameras and technology to sort of figure out who this guy was.
Right. So they used dozens of video clips from most likely a lot of different sources, Justin. I mean, you know, there's a lot of businesses in the area. And you know where the shooting happened last Wednesday? I mean, a lot of high-rise buildings over there. And but not just that. I mean, this was like a 10-mile stretch from Lake in Milwaukee, where the shooting happened, all the way to 63rd and Ashland on the south side in the West Englewood neighborhood. That's where they were, like, you know, they followed him from there all the way to 63rd and Ashland, you know, pulling video apparently along the way. And they learned that he lived only a couple blocks away from 63rd and Ashland. And that's where, you know, the police tried to serve the warrant on Saturday. Now, yeah, I mean, the police department has, you know, put forth a lot of investment into technology, particularly with respect to video. You know, they have, you know, the 22, you know, well, not all 22, but the individual police districts and the three detective areas all have officers who, you know, work with video and reviewing video. And obviously that's what the police are, when the police put this video out there. It was actually a suburban police department. The Itasca Police Department recognized Michael Blackman as a suspect in one of their crimes. And that's really what helped the police arrest him.
And Jeremy Gorner is my guest, Chicago Tribune reporter. He's covering the Michael Blackman shooting case, the saga. Now let's get to the morning, Saturday morning, where the police go knocking on the door. He goes out the back door. He gets a struggle with a police officer. I was surprised in reading your story and others just about the idea that there's an apprehension unit. What? Talk about this, because it seems to me that this guy is obviously dangerous and violent, and it seemed to me like that maybe, I don't know, there wasn't enough police presence to bring this guy into custody.
It's really hard to tell, Justin. I mean, you know, I wasn't out there when they tried to execute the warrant. you know, I tried to learn a little bit more about, you know, how many police officers were out there at the time they tried to execute the warrant, and the police department wouldn't tell me. But what I can tell you is that it's pretty normal for, you know, the Fugitive Apprehension Unit. They work with the U.S. Marshals to arrest, you know, suspects who are considered armed and dangerous, especially if they know their whereabouts. I mean, that's common practice. That unit's been around for years doing that kind of work. I mean, I remember, if you recall, I mean, in 2014, there was a fugitive apprehension mission in Englewood where a police captain at the time was shot when they tried to execute a warrant on a guy wanted out of Indiana who was wanted for a violent crime there. And that guy ended up shooting a police captain, or he ended up getting charged with shooting a police captain and also shooting a member of the fugitive apprehension team. So they go on missions like that.
Yeah, it's dangerous
all the
work,
time.
Right.
Right, very dangerous work. And so they go on missions like that all the time. I can't tell you, I don't know how many officers there were out there, but I do know that SWAT ended up joining in the fray, you know, once he shot the officer because they thought that he was barricaded in the building over there, and they were going from building to building. And then, you know, gradually as the day progressed, there was just obviously a much bigger presence, you know, once they learned right. that he was only a few blocks away, you know, before he ended up getting in, you know, another gun battle with police before Blackman himself was ultimately
now, shot. I read in the story, it's crazy to think that a lot of people, once this happened and Malay neighbors were, you know, were taking videos on their phones and their video surveillance. And once again, video came into play where police officers were asking neighbors to look at which direction he ran. And they recognized mm-hmm. that actually helped them find out where he was.
You know, what I can say to that, too, is you know, it is amazing because, I took a ride around there probably a good hour or so before he ended up showing his face, you know, a few blocks away from where the shooting occurred. And that whole neighborhood was just sealed off by, like, police were blocking off streets everywhere, probably within a three-block radius of where the shooting actually occurred, you know, Saturday morning. Yeah, and he was really only found three blocks away, you know, after that, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. hours later after that shooting. So, so if you take the fact that there were, you know, other people who had eyes on video, you know, coupled by the already existent police presence there, I mean, you know, I would think that that probably played a role in his capture.
Yeah, what a horrific story, but one that played out over this weekend in Chicago. Now, you said he's not talking to police. He was wounded. Several gunshots. Is he expected to recover? And is I don't know what the yeah. I would assume most criminals don't want to talk to police. So, at what point does more information in this case become available?
Well, I think it'll probably. You know, I mean, there's probably a lot that didn't come out today that we don't know. I mean, ideally, you know, before a case hits court, you know, they're going to present physical evidence, you know, most likely, you know, the video, mm-hmm. you know, tracking, you know, doing kind of a TikTok of his whereabouts from the time of the shooting that happened Wednesday to, you know, the time of the shooting on Saturday when the officer was shot. So they're going to look at video and piece all that together and probably present that as evidence. Another thing they're going to probably do is, you know, just in this case, what CPD has that they don't usually, well, not, I shouldn't say usually, but don't always have when they bring, you know, when charges are, you know, announced on one of their suspects, is they actually have a gun in this case. So many times when they arrest somebody in a shooting, they don't find a gun, but this case they do have a gun. And they're saying that this gun is connected to the shooting of the police officer, the shooting of the woman, and, you know, and so on and so forth. So they have physical evidence based on what they said today. And now, aside from that, it's just a matter of, you know, if they have witnesses. We don't know who those witnesses are yet, but, you know, that could come at play, you know, in court. Yeah. So just because he's not talking, that doesn't mean that they don't have a case, obviously.
My last question to you is, as you mentioned, just, you know, obviously in Lakeview and any connections, and everyone seems to want to piece this together. You know, in your case, just in your experience as being a reporter, how often does more information come out Because it seems to me, and I guess I'd ask the same question about how often is it that, that this is just could be just a random act of violence?
I mean, you know, a lot of the time, you know, a lot of the time when there is a shooting, okay, I mean, you know, you hear about, you know, same explanations. Oh, it was gang related, which is a pretty vague term used to describe a shooting. Or there was an interpersonal conflict, like there was a, you know, there were some disputes over social media or, you know, domestic violence or something like that. But, you know, when something is, I'm sure that there's a lot more, there are a lot more shootings out there that are random, that are done at random, that we just don't hear about. I think the reason that, you know, that we heard about this one is just because, you know, this whole thing was touched off by a shooting that happened in a part of the city where we rarely, if ever, hear about gun violence.
Right.
You know, and in such a high visibility area, middle of broad daylight, and you know, a guy on a bicycle. You know, and then, you know, so I think that just because of that, you know, just those dynamics, and that the police were at a loss to explain how this happened. I mean, that's why, you know, that became more predominant. That became more prominently known than other shootings we hear about. And of course, as you know, there's thousands of them in the city each year. So
right.
This was certainly a rare case.
Oh, man, what a story. Jeremy Gorner, great Chicago Tribune reporter who has been covering this all weekend with his colleagues. Jeremy, thanks for joining us, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
There you go. What a, I got to say, he's one of the best. And he covers crime for the Chicago Tribune, which is such a difficult job. Think about it. Even tonight, you can hear the back drop of his phone. He's out. He's, I mean, talk about reporting. There's not a lot of reporters like that. We have to go out every single night and cover Chicago violence like this. But what a story. And just to be able to tell us a little bit more about how this particular story unraveled or unveiled itself to us. I would just expect there to be more information, because if you're going to continually say we don't know or it's random, it's going to, the vacuum will be filled. It's going to be filled by Twitter and theories and conspiracy theories, like you said. I mean, usually it's such a vague term, gang-related or interpersonal. In this case, they don't seem to know the interpersonal part. And it just makes you wonder about a lot of things. And again, our background is watching action-adventure movies about this kind of stuff. We don't really know. But what an awful, terrible story with people who were at this moment innocently shot, including the police officer, and we pray for thoughts to their family as they get better. But what a crazy story that happened in Chicago over the last couple days. We'll continue tonight here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720, rolling along here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you got something to say. We're going to talk about the future of work coming up here and some sobering statistics and studies that say that automation is here to stay. It's on its way, and almost up to half of our jobs are going to be automated in 20 to 25 years. Always good information to have at a cocktail party. Have that conversation coming up. Also, John Schmidt's back. We're going to take you out to the Logan's Tomb, the statue of General Logan in Grant Park. It's the famous one with the sword drawn, sort of down by Balboa or 8th, 9th, 10th Street, something down there. And it made famous, of course, in 1968 in the Democratic National Convention with all the hippies hanging on it. Well, that's actually Logan's tomb, or was supposed to be Logan's tomb, but he never arrived. So we'll talk about that with John Schmidt, sort of his continuing. He wrote a great book about Chicago hidden landmarks that we've been going through his book and bringing them to life.
General Logan, of course, the most hipster of Civil War generals.
General Logan, sir, why do you have a Pabst Blue Ribbon in your hand? Well, sir, I give all my Civil War generals a British accent. Sir, what? Yeah, he probably had a handlebar mustache. Like, sir, what's with your flannel shirt? Why are you rolling up your jeans like that? It's British. There was one British. Like, he was a lieutenant. He wasn't a general. He was just a lieutenant. He was a British lieutenant underneath General Logan in the Civil War. He was from Massachusetts. Also, hip-hop artist Tokio is going to perform live in studio. Excited to have him from the Save Money crew that has produced so many of the great Chicago hip-hop artists of today, from Chance the Rapper to Vic Mensa, Joey Perp, and Tokio down the line. I mean, the list keeps growing. We're going to talk to him about his career, also about a really turbulent year he's had. He had accusations of sexual assault levied against him on Twitter. It wasn't a criminal case or a civil case. It was a Twitter accusation, and it's picked up by all the national media. And we'll ask him about it. We'll talk about that coming up tonight on Extension 720. So we got lots to do, so let's get to it. Chicago Bears can have a lead. It's great. Early in the second quarter. We'll keep you updated on that. I'm sure we'll have that coming up in the sports here. And it's been the Khalil Mack Show, as it always is when he really does shine. He is just a... the Bears' defense seems to shine with the national spotlight. They like the bright lights. When they get those 12 noon games, they're like, eh, what's the point? This is not going to go anywhere with my legacy. They get these Monday Night Football games, and it's just like, oh, Sac City. Here they come. They kind of shooting themselves in the foot a little bit with penalties, things like that. But, again, they are just all, they're just, as they do. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a recent study from Oxford University says that in the next 20 years, nearly half of all jobs will likely be eliminated by technology. It's a startling number and points to a grim future that we in this country may not be ready for. But let's face it, almost every time this story is told, it seems like a dystopian futuristic tale. But the future is the present. The immediacy and our lack of awareness led a venture capitalist, Art Bilger, to create Working Nation. It's a news operation telling stories of the future of work, or the lack thereof. The site is hiring amazing journalists to tell these stories, including my guest tonight, Joan Lynch, Chief Content and Programming Officer. Lynch has spent her career in media, including serving as VP and Executive Producer of Content for ESPN. She oversaw the 30 for 30 documentary series when she was there. She has two Peabodys. And also Ramona Schindelheim, the Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation, a former financial journalist who has won numerous awards in her time, working for the Wall Street Journal, CNBC, ABC News. She also has two Peabodys, four Peabodys in this conversation, and I welcome you both to Extension 720. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. All right, so let's get right into this. Where does this come from, this idea of using stories and storytelling to attack or take on this issue that I don't think a lot of Americans are paying attention to?
You know, when Art Bilger decided that he wanted to attack this, he at first thought that he wanted to do a documentary and then thought it might be a little too dark and too scary and he could scare the crap out of people in 40 minutes, but he couldn't do much about talking about the solutions. And so he and I went back and forth, and what we talked about was we needed to be talking about it every single day. We needed to bring in journalists. It was during the election year that as we were going around the country, and we recognized both in the debates and throughout the election, people were talking about jobs, but really just unemployment numbers mm-hmm. or jobs created. Right. But they weren't really digging any deeper, and they certainly were not talking about solutions for the future.
Yeah, and I think the good part about storytelling is you tell a story, you connect with people, show them examples of how it's affecting their lives. And as Joan just said, you know, you could scare people and say, oh, you know, the robots are going to take your job. But if you tell them a story about programs that are going to help train them, you're going to show them how robots aren't mm-hmm, going to take mm-hmm. their jobs. You're going to be working alongside them. They're going to take over some of the mundane things that you do. We already see that, you know, in many factories and that, where they take over the mundane jobs. But there's a need for your brain. There's a need for your knowledge, your new technical skills that you can get. So the storytelling allows us to help prepare people.
It's important, too, because we've seen traditional media almost provide the story as a kicker story. When one of the colleges or universities comes up with a robot that has legs or can talk or right. do anything, it becomes, oh, look at this. But it doesn't necessarily, either it's ringing a bell, being very alarmist, or it's just sort of
they're
not telling the whole story.
Right. I saw this presentation about 2 years ago at the Recode conference, and it was Mary Meeker, who's a famous analyst, and she put up all these headlines from the beginning of 1900s from the newspapers. So about every 15 or 20 years, there's a headline that says robots are going to take your jobs.
Right.
So the story has been there, and as a journalist and as someone who has worked in local and national news, that gets people's attention when you say that. But I think it does a disservice to people. You can ring that bell, but you need to tell them why you're ringing the bell and what they can do about it.
It's a reading the stuff and getting ready for this. You recognize that the future is now. That some of those stories that have been told in the past are about we don't know what the date's going to be. But as you see, even as we talk about what you might call the mundane jobs, it's being done. It's actually happening as we speak on the radio right now.
It is, and from a Working Nation perspective, we feel like we need to put the human face and the name on it, because we believe that your average American is looking at these numbers and looking at the robot stories and thinking, that could be me, and what do I do now? In fact, we did a piece of content a couple of years ago called The Table, where we got CEOs and thought leaders together at a table to talk about this topic. But before we started the conversation, we showed them a short documentary about two specific people at the Carrier company down in Indianapolis, and their body language changed. And these are people used to talking about this topic at a high level. All of a sudden, they were leaning into the table and talking to each other and referring to those two workers by name and problem solving instead of throwing out data or just being on a panel, which we love these conversations and people problem solving. They're talking about human beings, and we believe that's what we need to do more of in this country.
It seems to me that this conversation we're having tonight is really about the future of work. It gets boiled down as when it comes to politics and when it comes to media in a lot of ways. But in politics, you see it where it's just about can you get more jobs or can you fill more jobs? And you don't necessarily know, is the CEO in the corporation trying to take away a job? Or is that just the way that the world is going and they don't really have control over it? There's a lot of unanswered questions about what the future of work is.
I'd push back on that first number that you were talking about, because there's been a lot of studies. And one that I think is probably more accurate is there'll be jobs that go away. There's one study that said 13% of the jobs that exist today won't exist in 20 years. And then there'll be another 13% that don't exist today will exist in 20 years. And those in the middle are going to be enhanced. They're going to be changed. We talked already about how automation is changing the jobs. That's what we're trying to tell people. The companies, to get to your point, the companies that are looking at that and looking to the future, they're already figuring out ways to reskill. Companies are working with community colleges or local leaders. And we always say, all jobs are local,
right?
Because your company is in your community. And if they want to figure out how to keep those jobs filled, how to be successful in the future, they have to start thinking about it now, and there are plenty that are doing that.
I think it was the employment gap, or this idea that what we're really seeing when it comes to the future of work is that the skills that are necessary are not being taught, or people just don't have them. They have to retrain themselves. Is that something that we're equipped as a country to recognize? Are we recognizing, you know what, let's change it up. We have to all come together and do this, whether it be through government programs or whether it be for just the private sector. But is that where we're at, where we just have to kind of recognize that our future depends on how we can adapt?
Yeah, and as Ramona was saying, I think we're especially at that local level, and we've seen some really great examples of where local communities have responded to a need. We did a piece about Tri-C Community College out in Cleveland, and they were recognizing that their first responders were retiring and aging out. And longevity is something that we talk about a lot at Working Nation, which I don't think most of the media talks about when they talk about jobs. We're just staying in the workforce longer. We either choose to or...
Yes, people are 79-year-old is now the average age of somebody dying.
Yeah.
So people are working those extra 14, 15 years that they thought they were going to be retired.
But Tri-C realized, okay, we're not... that both police and firemen are aging out, and they partnered with the bank KeyBank and the local community, the fire department, the police department, to train the workforce that they needed. And other communities have since reached out to us and said, oh, we have the same problem, mm-hmm. but we just didn't know that we needed to create this local solution, and we can. So one of the things that we love about the stories we're telling is it's sort of a roadmap for other communities in terms of figuring out how to have the skills necessary for the jobs in your local area.
Yeah.
I also think that there are programs out there that people are just not aware of. Mm-hmm. So here in Illinois, in Schaumburg, is Zurich Insurance Company. They have an apprenticeship program where they pay you. You're a paid worker, but they pay you to go to school to learn the tech skills that you need, and you have a job at the end of 2 years. I don't know if anybody out there knows that. There may be a handful of people.
It comes down to whether or not that is a sustainable model. You'll see all companies just kind of adapt that. That'll become the what we know work is, that you also have to retrain yourself every 2-3 years.
And it's a good question that we have a lot internally about whose responsibility is it to train workers. So is it the responsibility of colleges or universities? You know, a lot of CEOs, I think Gallup did a poll, but about CEOs saying the workforce coming out of school are not prepared for the jobs, whereas the colleges were polled and they're saying our kids and adults coming out of school are prepared for the job. And it's a giant discrepancy between the numbers on the poll.
I'll bet.
But whose responsibility is that? We talk about that a lot with the military as well, because we talk about veterans and jobs. And it's a very clear way for us to say, okay, you've spent 2 to 20 years in the military. Is it their job to train them for what the jobs that are out there? Not really. But is that the same conversation that you're having with colleges and community colleges and certification programs?
And with college being so expensive, people are looking for alternatives. You know, the debt. You know, I mean, I don't know what the number is, the billions, of course. But so what, you know, if you're not being prepared in a 4-year school, is it worth the money? Is the return on investment? That's a question we talk to a lot of education people about as well.
We're talking about the future of work. Working Nation, workingnation.com is the website. Joan Lynch is the Chief Content and Programming Officer for Work Nation, and Ramona Schindelheim is the Editor-in-Chief. You can, like I said, workingnation.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Joan Lynch and Ramona Schindelheim are here. They are with Working Nation, workingnation.com, and really talking about the future of work and how we're seeing that the future is now when it comes to automation and job loss and just maybe the evolving nature of what a job is. And we've had conversations on this program where we get philosophical about what work means to a human being or what it means to a community. And that has to factor in here. It can't just be retrain and we'll get you a new job. There's a lot that goes into what it means to be a person when it comes to work.
Yeah, right now I'm the editor-in-chief and I've done financial news for a long time. So data is something that I use a lot. But it's important if you look at the context of what I'm saying. So 7 million open jobs out there, 7.2 million. That's open jobs where employers say they cannot find the right people who are skilled. There are 6 million unemployed people looking for work. There's 1.5 million people who are underemployed. Maybe they're working two jobs because they're trying to make ends meet. But the mismatch there is that people don't have the right skills. And when we've talked about this too, you know, there's a lot of things that we talk about, not just numbers. The feeling of a purpose in somebody's life. We just did a roundtable a couple of months ago with a bunch of religious leaders, and Rabbi David Wolpe is a pretty well-known rabbi in Los Angeles in particular, but pretty well-known around the world. And he said, what is the first question you ask somebody when you meet them? It's not, where do you live, or how many, are you married? It's, what do you do for a living?
What do you do, right, mm-hmm. right.
So if you're not able to say something with pride or a sense of satisfaction, that does affect you. So it is important. One of the underlying things that we talk about is not just making sure everybody has a job, but it's a good job. It's a good middle-class job.
One of the most interesting things I've heard in the 4.5 years since we started Working Nation is people have been researching how people come back from trauma and how long it takes for you to come back from trauma. So it could be an illness, a death in the family, a divorce. And the one that I was told that was the hardest to track was long-term unemployment. And if you think about that, it does make sense, and it still gives me chills. You know, people aren't bringing things to your house necessarily every day or asking you how you are, and it's an awkward situation, and it's humbling.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of issues around this country now that we say almost every story is a job story. You know, the situation with opioids in this country and violence and a lot of different things can be tied back to not having exactly what you talked about, the purpose, having a job, having somewhere to go. We see it happening internationally in a lot of countries that have very high unemployment. It's concerning in this country as it could get higher.
We find ourselves, and it's this American dream, this concept that we go to, you know, higher education. We do all the right things. We do four-year college and university, find ourselves in debt, but we get out and we get a good job. We start families and the white picket fence and everything in between, right? That's right. The old American dream. And you've seen over time, a generation to generation, the parameters change. As we get to 2020 and new generations continue to populate the workforce, they're not thinking that way. They're thinking in different ways completely. So is there a way that just by basic, I don't know if there's a right word, evolution, that you'll see younger people who start to enter the workforce with different expectations or different understandings of what they need to learn, the skills they need to get us out of, you know, what we used to know as the American dream?
There's this idea out there of lifelong learning that you don't just... You know, before it was you went to school, then you worked, and then you retired. That can't work anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. You need to keep learning. So you have a 40-year-old who's been doing a job for 20 years. They have to retrain. They have to retrain so they can keep working now until, you know, past 65. But I think the kids that are coming out with the idea of college now, if they're going to college, you know, maybe they're going to community college, maybe they're doing a specialty program where they're just learning one skill, but they're going to have to keep learning. And I think they understand that. Austin Goolsbee, we were talking to him this morning, mm-hmm. the economist, University of Chicago. He was saying 10 jobs in a lifetime. But 10 good jobs, you know, in a lifetime, people are going to probably have to mm-hmm. have to be prepared for. So you can't just walk out and go, I'm done learning.
Yeah. It's a great way to rethink it, though, when you think 10 jobs and not necessarily as like a list, but just saying that's the American dream. You're going to get 10 good jobs.
Yeah. It's interesting from a media perspective. I think it's a great opportunity for local media, for radio, for others, because these solutions and these different types of jobs are often local. And so we tell stories. We have a series called I Want That Job. And honestly, I'm shocked at how well it's doing, because we're just pointing out which jobs are out there and what the growth is. And we won't point out a job unless we think that there's over 7% growth in the next few years. But we just did a piece on a wind turbine mechanic. 96% growth rate in the next 8 years. Hmm. You know, and so
the demand is crazy.
The demand is crazy. There's also, for folks that don't necessarily want to take on the debt or go to a four-year school, somebody that might say, hey, you know what, I'm really passionate about the environment. You know, there's a lot of jobs that you could go into that are really interesting, and there is room for growth.
Okay, so both of you are award-winning journalists, and you work in a field that has seen a lot of turnover, attrition, and layoffs, and corporatizing of the work. Because I think of a lot of people in that field, in media, have gone in, they've done the retrain, they get a new job, and then the corporation says, you know, we need to take 10% off the top if we're going to make waves, and they get laid off. And we see this not just in media, in all sorts of. So how do you find how do you talk to each other when the corporate side, which is all about making money, doesn't have the same value on jobs as the people who are trying to keep or retrain themselves for jobs?
You know, I just heard this from in Kansas City. Do you know the company Hallmark? It makes cards. They laid off a couple of years ago a huge number of people. Cut back, you know, and I don't know how they're filling, you know, all the card orders out there. Maybe everything's e-cards now, so you have to learn to do that. But what happened there was all those artists started their own businesses. They became entrepreneurs. And so there's a thriving art community in Kansas City now because of it. So entrepreneurship is something to look at. I mean, there's a need. Everybody's creating. You can create your own business. And it's not just for millennials. Mm. The average age for an entrepreneur is 40 years old. Because when you're 20, you may be able to convince somebody something. Mm-hmm. But 40, you have some experience behind you. You have some skills that you have built. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, it's horrible when people get laid off, but I urge people to think, what can I do? I mean, I've reinvented myself a million times. always as a writer or a journalist, but in different ways. I learned how to edit. I learned how to,
right,
you know, do all the things you need to do in a newsroom now. But I'm kind of being an entrepreneur now with Working Nation. So
it makes me think of my, I had an econ professor in college, and I went to Columbia College. It's an art school. Like, one of the things you had to take was, like, the economics class. And I remember he said, and it was the first day, first day of class, and he'd go around to each person in his class, what do you want to be? What are you doing in school? And they say, an actor. And he'd say, no, you don't. You want to own an actor's studio. Mm-hmm. He'd say the same thing to me. What do you want to do? I want to be in radio. Well, no, you want to own a radio station, because that's the system we work in. If you're going to get ahead, you need to be an entrepreneur. Yeah. It doesn't work any other way. And it's interesting to think that, you know, 25 years ago when I was told that, to what you're just saying now, that there is some truth that the only way to protect yourself in a world where automation other places is to think about being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, my daughter just graduated from UCLA with a theater degree. The last year, the whole, you know, each semester they did the business of being an actor and the business of being a writer, the business of being a producer, because they wanted you to understand that if you are your own business, you are your own entrepreneur. But again, like in Hallmark, those people, they started art galleries. There's ways to take your skills and do something with them and not have to depend on that corporate structure where you may get laid off because, you know, they miss their earnings by a penny.
So my final question for you guys just is really about the government portion of this, because it seems that whether it be political reporting or candidates or lawmakers, they're really twisting the numbers, whether it's unemployment numbers or employment numbers or who's hiring, who's not. Everything in between seems to be, they made politics out of jobs.
Yeah.
And I guess the question is, that are we going to need something not unlike what we saw with the Green New Deal or even the New Deal back in Roosevelt's time? Some sort of job forward thinking approach from the United States government that is going to tackle the issues that you're talking about to try and reconcile some of these numbers.
It's interesting. One of the folks that works with us, Richard Ramirez, he said to me about 3 or 4 years ago when we were first really building this out, we need a Marshall Plan. We need the new Marshall Plan for jobs. And now, I think in Minnesota or
Michigan,
yeah, it's actually how they refer to it.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying whether or not that was original, but you're absolutely right. I think that what we're talking about, though, is that the local leaders are the ones that are going to make this change. We've both spent enough time in Washington and in network news covering elections to know that it is the local solutions that are going to really help with this problem. But also, as we go into an election year with the White House at stake, that Americans know that the White House is not going to change their job situation. It's going to be right. What's going on. It's going to be the corporate leaders, the educators, the not-for-profits. Mm-hmm. State and local leaders.
Because yeah. They can enact the programs. I mean, D.C. is not going to be able to do a program that fits. It's not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. So again, what goes on in your community is different. You have different companies there. You have different populations there. So you do need that local solutions.
We've been spending a lot of time with the National Governors Association and a lot of governors, and each state has different problems, and they've been talking to us about, this is how many jobs we have in our state. How do we tell people that they exist? How do we tell people
right.
what skills they
need? Right.
Such an interesting perspective from us, because we would think that people would know that, but apparently not.
Well, great topics, great stories, and great storytelling on workingnation.com. You can check it out. Joan Lynch is the Chief Content and Programming Officer for Working Nation, and Ramona Schindelheim, who is from the Chicago area.
Woo-hoo!
Used
Aurora.
To work in Chicago.
East.
Aurora East.
DePaul.
She's the editor-in-chief of Working Nation. And like I said, workingnation.com. Thank you so much for coming in and talking about this.
Thanks
appreciate
for having
it.
Us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Extension 720 rolling along here on 720 WGN. Chicago Bears look to be going into half with a big lead, 21-0 lead right now. They're driving again, but it might have stalled. There's not a lot of time left, and looks like they might just be out of Eddie Pinheiro's distance or his range, especially with the big muscles. And
how long is his range exactly? Have we really tested it yet?
Well, the issue tonight is that Eddie Pinheiro showed up on the injury report over the weekend with a minor knee injury because he was lifting weights and hurt himself.
No.
You're an athlete. You know what that's like.
Yeah, just kind of play through it.
Yeah, and I guess that earlier, while they were showing all the puff piece human interest stories about our fine new kicker, until he misses a kick, they were showing him warming up on the field, and he had grimaced and walking gingerly when he was kicking 35-yard field goals.
Oh, man.
And he has not been kicking kickoffs. That's usually what he does, so they've stopped him from doing that. Right now, they're in a review, and I believe it's a touchdown looking at it, so it might be that the Chicago Bears might have another. But on the field, it was ruled incomplete. But right now, the Bears are in control of this game.
His foot's down in the end zone.
Yeah, there you go.
Super Bowl. Super Bowl. I totally flipped the switch from 15 minutes ago.
Right there.
So Mitch Trubisky's terrible. This team is going to do nothing.
Did you hear, it's probably my favorite thing, I did a spit take at my desk earlier when OB was on, and they were talking about, they played the clip of Matt Nagy talking about, hey, listen, you know, some quarterbacks that shall not be named are going into the Hall of Fame, and if you looked at their second, third year in a league, they were throwing 9 interceptions, no touchdowns. So everybody give him a break, right? Give Mitch Trubisky a break. And then Carms came out and said, what do you think of that? And OB said something to the effect of, if I wish I was a reporter in that room, I'm like, what would you ask? Because I wouldn't say a thing. Understand, like, they're gonna bum rush the stage. I think that would be, I think, an improvement on the game. If the post game, you made all the writers had to go in a different room, and it was former defensive linemen and linebackers who asked the questions of the coach, so it just got a little bit more, you know, dangerous. That would make for a better experience. But right now, the Chicago Bears are winning. They did rule that a touchdown, so the Bears, before the extra point, have a 4-touchdown lead on the Washington Redskins at halftime. That's amazing.
Can we go back to 1940 when the Bears won 73-0?
Yeah, they brought that up, I think, on SportsCenter the other day. That's good. It's hard, you know, as we hit halftime here, and we're not necessarily the sports analysts and experts, although I do play one on the radio, Tuesday evening quarterback. We'll do Tuesday evening quarterback tomorrow night with Adam Hogue. But it's hard because this Chicago Bears team has run into the buzzsaw of criticism for starting slow and not picking up where they left off last year after an amazing season that was cut short by a double doink. And everyone was very concerned after the Thursday night opener against the Packers, where they didn't score a touchdown, and even doubly concerned when they eked out a win against the Broncos in Denver. But here they are in Monday Night Football, changing the narrative. I would say after this first half, and it started slow for Mitch Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky had a tough start where the line was not necessarily blocking, and they couldn't get the running game going. It's another unbalanced. But something clicked in the second quarter, and Mitch Trubisky has thrown 2-3 touchdown passes, including one here that was, what, 40-some-odd yards? Not something that we expect, as the Bears have had a tough time going deep this year. So it changes the narrative, and I think that already in the first half is 3 touchdown passes to Taylor Gabriel. If you are a critic of the Chicago Bears, it's hard to poke holes in that. You know, you might say, well, you know, you're not looking at the whole picture. Trubisky hasn't played all that great, blah, blah, blah. The defense scored a touchdown in this game and should point that out. But when this defense is playing like it is and the all-world MVP Khalil Mack continues to dominate in under the lights, and you can get 3 touchdown passes in the first half from your quarterback that everybody's much maligned quarterback, I think that's a winning recipe. Now, the Washington DCs are terrible. They are not a team that is probably going to make it out of this week with their coach intact. It's maybe the end of the Jay Gruden experiment in Washington if they start. This would make them 0-3. Are they 0-2 going in? They do not look very good. Now, it might be their quarterback play. It might be their defense is pretty atrocious. But point is, it does shed light on what if you're seeing the 3-0 resurgence of the Green Bay Packers up north. What if that Packers defense is as good as advertised? They beat the Vikings and kept the Vikings to, what, 16 points, I think, in that game? They shut out the Bears and just one field goal. And yesterday took easy all over Joe Flacco and the Denver Broncos. So what does that mean? You know, I think maybe you have to think about the fact that the Packers are 3-0 and they barely walked out of Soldier Field with a victory. And you have to look at, we talked about this right at the last week at the end of the program, Pete, that perhaps people aren't looking at the right narrative when it comes to that Broncos game, which we all watched and were grimacing at how bad it was. But there is not a time in the last decade in which the Broncos have gone 0-2, because usually they have two games. One of those two is going to be at home, and they don't lose in whatever Comerica Park, whatever the, what is it, Mile High? I forget the name, FedEx, whatever the stadium. They're all named after corporations. But they don't lose at home. And this was the first time, I think, in franchise in 10-plus, 15-plus years that the Broncos have fallen to 0-2. And so what does that say to the, about the Chicago Bears, that they were possibly, you know, broke what was other, many other teams, many good teams have gone into Denver and not been able to do anything. So maybe that plus this win, that, I don't want to say it's a win yet, but 28-0 and the Redskins are driving here at the end. But I wonder what that says. What's that says about a Chicago Bears team that everybody had written off is this is going to be a soft year. Matt Nagy with a nice rebound here and showing the whole country that maybe Thursday night was more of a fluke a couple Thursdays ago. Now they got the Vikings coming up and they got the Raiders in London. They easily could be looking at a successful first quarter of the NFL season the way they're playing tonight.
Lovie Smith used to.
Yeah.
Right. Lovie Smith used to say.
All right, we'll take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back. And I want to talk about a couple of stories that are in the news that have grabbed my attention. One being the dispensary argument we heard in Jen's news about how the mayor is, sort of, how she's characterizing her fight to keep dispensaries from downtown Chicago. She wants to spread the wealth. She wants it to go to neighborhoods, and she doesn't necessarily want it to go to the rich and wealthy downtown. That's how she's characterizing that fight. And I also want to talk about the Chicago Teachers Union, Chicago Police, or Chicago Public Schools, as they get down to the wire. The vote for strike authorization is this week. We could know by Friday if Chicago teachers expect to walk the picket line. We'll have that conversation, talk about that coming up here. Stay with us. I forgot to mention, tonight is the WGN softball playoffs. As you can, as you're a fan of WGN and you've been listening to the Extension 720 throughout the season, you know that we have a juggernaut.
They're still playing?
Because of the rain.
Oh.
There has been nonstop rain delays in the last, rain outs in the last 4 weeks.
When did the season start?
Started before Memorial Day.
Oh, wow.
So we were supposed to end the season. I believe this would have been the final week or maybe last week of, scheduled wise, but there's been so many rainouts they've pushed it back. Now the final will be on October 7th.
This is such a time commitment.
It really is. Well, as evidenced, as the coach, I'm the manager of the softball team, and Pete Zimmerman is the star third baseman. And we are out for the playoffs because we are hosting and producing Extension 720.
Yeah.
So we are a little shorthanded tonight, but we have enough to go around, and the game is getting underway. I believe at 9 o'clock. So everyone, I'm still fielding, you know, errant text messages or emails that are like, "Hey, where's this place at? I'm late." And I have to, in the break, be like, "You have to get there. I'm not going to be there."
How many games have you guys had to miss though because of the show?
Yeah, we've missed 50-50. I think it's about 50-50.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's a little incomplete. And to, you know, this is the first round, and we're a top seed. We're a number two seed, so we kind of had the bye week, and now I believe the Onion comes in to play the satirical newspaper. They play us coming up here at 9 o'clock in the first round of the playoffs. So we're hoping we get through this week, and then we'll just kind of have to look at what happens. I'm hoping for a little Mother Nature help.
I'd want to go just to meet people who worked for the Onion.
Yeah, they're all out there. There's the Onion's in it, the Trib's in it, the Reader, the Chicago Reader is in it.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, it's a fun league. And we've had so many troubles with the park and the rain. There's no, it's a Chicago park in the, on the west side, and there's no drainage. So if it rains on Saturday, you're not playing on Monday. It's that kind of thing. So we've figured out the games tonight are in Portage Park.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Good
then,
park.
Yeah. And then we're playing the final in Forest Park behind the 16-inch Hall of Fame. So we're hoping. There's a Blackhawks game. Hard to believe, but the Blackhawks are back. The Blackhawks play, I believe, on October 14th. It's a Monday, so we won't have an extension 720. And so the hope is that there'd be one more rain delay or rain out that would force the game to the 14th. Then Pete and I, oh, we're so rested. It's like when a guy's had like six days off and he comes in and hits two home runs.
That'll be Columbus Day.
Oh, even better.
Miles will be home.
Yeah, he come out.
Yeah.
Yeah, bat boy. There you go. Although it takes about maybe about 15 minutes for Miles to be like, all right, I'm out. I'm not interested anymore. I'm going to go find the playground.
You have to give him a job to do.
Yeah. Like pick up the bat kind of stuff.
Something, yeah, like get him involved.
Yeah, but you see how that worked out with Dusty Baker's kids.
Does he know how to keep stats? Yeah. Because he seems like one of those very data-driven type people.
That would be a good idea.
Bring his iPad out and have him add up data.
Yeah. Or yeah, like sabermetrics.
Right.
Know where people were shading.
Where should we shift this? Where did he do last time?
Maybe he can like do some physics and tell you how to hit the ball in order to...
You know, I was out at the No Gloves tournament over the summertime, and George Bliss took me around to talk to some of the old-timers who were coaches or still playing in the No Gloves championship. So he'd walk up to guys on the field. He took me on the field. Like, I felt like such a champion. And he'd take me and be like, this is Eddie No-Nose Johnson, you know, that kind of thing. You're like, what? And they would one guy showed me the different swings in 16-inch softball. And you can, you know, like how to cut the ball, how to hit the right field. He showed me all this stuff in the practice. And I got to the next game, which was the next, you know, when we were playing. And, you know, there's one of those games where we had time to warm up. So I'm like, Jesse, you want to hit? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to try this. Ball comes in. I go for the cut. Right away, I'm like, ow. Like, shoulder hurt. And I'm like, that's not supposed to happen. That ow. So that was it. I'm like, you know, what if I just hit regular? Shut my eyes, close my eyes tight, and hit as regular as possible. But yeah, this is a big year for WGN. Be nice to bring the trophy home. First charter season in this league. They've been, the GN team had been in the, I think, the radio league before, and that disbanded in some form. I don't know what happened. But Pete and I have been at night, so, and we're both softball guys, and I've managed a couple teams, and I don't want to make a big deal about it, but you are talking to a three-time champion.
Yeah.
And the overall, WGN never had a team, and I was always flabbergasted by that. I always was like, why do you not have play softball? We can't play because we're on at night. And then when we moved to the Cochrane Show, got back into it, and then with the White Sox broadcasts and the way it worked out, I started a team again. And it has gelled faster than I thought it was. I thought this might be a gimme year where we go like maybe a 4-7 on the season, figure it out. You know, they got to deal with the 16-inch softball, as opposed to no gloves. Everyone's complaining. What do you mean no gloves? And it took like that.
Yeah.
Now the team is the best defense in the league.
We could probably get an update before the show's over.
Yeah,
we'll probably go past.
Oh yeah,
10.
Yeah, we will. We'll know who won.
And I feel that
I'm a little nervous. Should I send a group text like right now? They're warming up.
No,
that can't be. Like I'll put it in all caps. Like I'm yelling. Like, come on, guys, let's do it, guys. Or I'll just leave them alone.
I feel that if WGN wins tonight, goes on in the playoffs, eventually wins the championship of this media league, which will make you a four-time softball champion. Yeah. I think that automatically makes you a Hall of Fame eligible.
Gosh. Thank you.
Three, I'm not sure. I think you might need the fourth.
Yeah. Can I count on you for a letter of rec to the Hall of Fame when time comes? I was talking to one of the umpires, and they said there's a whole process to get into the Hall of Fame. And there's some great Chicago media. They have a media section. So this is what I could be in. It's like Tim Weigel, Bob Surratt.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mike Royko.
True Hall of Famers.
Those are true Hall of Famers. Could you imagine getting your name up on the plaque outside right next to those guys? But you have to be, I think it's over 50.
Ooh, got to wait.
And you have
to
have played 10 years in the league or something like that. And I'm right there. Like, I'm 45 and I only played like 8 years. But yeah, I'm not just a manager. You know, I've won. I've hit clutch hits.
Right.
You know,
you're
I know
one
how to
of our
game.
Better hitters.
Yeah. I'm softball. I live softball. I breathe it. I thank Wonder Lake Little League for instilling the hand-eye coordination. My dad pulling me over to the side of the house, whipping league balls at me. Or when the whole neighborhood in Wonder Lake would get together and they'd go down to the park and they'd play softball and you'd watch and be like, I want to play. And you're like, why is everyone drinking a beer? Why does every dad have a beer in one hand when they're trying to figure out this game? You're like, this isn't a sanctioned game, is it? It's just a park game. Everyone got together at the block party. All right, we'll take a break here. I want to talk about the dispensaries and teachers union stuff. We got plenty of time tonight. Coming up, though, I want to also, John Schmidt, we're going to go out to Logan's tomb, where General Logan was supposed to be buried. He never was. We'll talk with John Schmidt about that. And also hip-hop artist from Chicago, from Save Money, Tokyo, performing in studio tonight. It's Extension 720. Stay with us. Thanks, Jen. And Curtis. Extension 720 rolling along here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. As Curtis said, there will be the post game tonight with Hamp, Kaz, and OB, Carms as well. And he said in the promo, he said 10:15, but the way this game is going, I'm not sure that that's going to be the case. Maybe. Maybe they just keep it on the ground. Of course, the Bears winning 28-3. They have the ball and they're driving again at the beginning. So this is could be a full-blown bona fide blowout. So we'll see about that.
Now that you went and said that.
Hey, yeah, that's how much confidence I have in my Bears. All right. Who doesn't love Chicago history? And as a city thrives and builds, it also tears down and forgets. And sometimes all that's left is a random sign or a placard, or in some cases, nothing at all. Tonight, we continue our series called Hidden Chicago Landmarks. In this series, we bring to life the stories in historian John Schmidt's new book of the same name, Hidden Chicago Landmarks. We head out to the various sites with John to talk about their significance and history. So tonight, let's talk about Logan's statue and Logan's tomb. The problem? General Logan isn't there. Let's go to Grant Park, shall we? We're here with Chicago historian and Extension 720 contributor John R. Schmidt. We are checking out some of the hidden Chicago landmarks that are featured in his book. Today, we find ourselves at a very familiar spot. This is Grant Park and Logan's tomb. What do we know about this? We all know the statue, right? You know the statue of... Maybe we don't. Maybe people don't know the statue.
We're off 9th Street, actually. And in 1968, of course, we got pictures that went around the world of this site because this is where the Democratic Convention was up at the Hilton, the headquarters of the convention.
Right.
And this is like a block or two away.
Yeah, and all the hippies protests, were hanging
yeah,
over
the protests
it.
Protests were hanging
yeah,
over
right.
there.
It's
and,
a classic photo.
Yeah,
right.
And I was there, but I wasn't a hippie, but I didn't get any photos.
You didn't get up on the...
No. That's. I was just. We won't go into that. Anyway, about Logan over here. Logan was a John Logan was his name. He was a Civil War general, and after the Civil War, he was one of the driving forces in establishing Memorial Day as a national holiday. And then he went into politics. He was from Illinois, became a U.S. senator from Illinois, and in 1884. He was the running mate for the Republican candidate for president with James G. Blaine. But in that election, the Blaine-Logan ticket lost to Grover Cleveland. Afterwards, though, Logan had made a name for himself. He's already well known as a Civil War general. And the whispers were he would be the front runner for the Republican nomination in 1888. I mean, he was still in his mid-50s, well known throughout the country. But then he did something very bad for his political career. He died.
Yeah. Good. It depends. Yeah, it depends. Yeah. But in this case, bad, right?
Yeah. And this happened to coincide. This was about a year after Ulysses S. Grant had died. And of course, Ulysses S. Grant was the Civil War general. Yeah.
And an Illinois guy.
And he was an Illinois guy. Well, the thing about Grant, when he died, New York City decided they were going to build this magnificent tomb for Grant on the Upper West Side of New York. And back in Chicago here, you know, some of those people from New York, you know, the body snatchers, they're taking our Illinois hero from Galena and they're putting him in Manhattan.
There's something to be said about that, right?
Yeah,
he wasn't from New York, so the idea he should have
a
monument here.
He died in New York State is where he was.
Still.
And anyway, be that as it may, So the people from Chicago here said, well, we've got our own Civil War general. He might not be as great a general as Grant was, but we'll build him an even bigger tomb over here. Okay? And they contacted the general, Logan's widow, and she was in Washington, D.C. He'd been buried in Washington, D.C., and she said, oh, that might be a good idea. And so the South Park commissioners and the state legislatures got together, and they appropriated $64,000 to build a tomb here.
Now, it's 1886 or whatever it is at this time. $64,000 may not sound like a lot right
now.
Might
be $1 or $2 million today, at least.
Yeah, I was going to say, we spent less on the catching the alligator.
And that was just for the planning stage.
But that's a ton of money for a municipality in the late 19th century.
Yeah, well, Mrs. Logan came out, and she looked at the site, and it looks very good and everything. So she went back to Washington, and the idea was they were going to move the general's body right away. Well, they didn't move him right away. Instead of moving him to Chicago, they moved him across D.C. to another cemetery, because this was the time when grave robbing was notorious.
And it happened to Lincoln.
They'd almost tried to steal Lincoln's body. Yeah. So she wasn't going to move the general until they were through with the tomb. So meanwhile, back in Illinois, we're going on more and more work with the tomb and everything. And they built this big mound over here.
Yeah, I want to get to that. Yeah.
Augustus St. Gaudens is the great sculptor of that era, and he designs the statue.
Which is an amazing statue. We're standing right underneath it here in Grant Park.
Yeah.
You got the horse. It's really from the Battle of Atlanta, right? He's holding the flag, and the flag's a little bit unfurled, but it's all concrete. It's an amazing sculpture. It really is.
Yeah, he was a hero in that battle, because the man holding the flag had gotten shot down, and the general rode up, and he's the general now. He's not just some schlub. And he picks up the flag, and he rallies the troops, and he leads them on to the battle. So the statue over here, they said this is such a realistic picture. You can almost see a horse snorting over here.
It's really great.
Yeah. So they had the statue designed. Well, getting back to the tomb, it was all set to move the general over here. But then Mrs. Logan starts hemming and hawing about it. Said, well, you know, maybe we should keep him where he is.
Yeah.
Because she had already been widowed for a few years now.
She's D.C. elite at this point,
she's
right?
D.C. elite.
She's one of
she's
in the swamp, if you will.
And she's like a world traveler and so on. And so she doesn't particularly want to come back to, you know, she comes back to Chicago and she's polite about it. But the upshot of the deal is the general stayed over here. This is why, in Washington, he never came here. That's why we had this mound here, because this could have been
tomb. All right, I need to get this right.
Yeah.
People know this spot. If you don't, it's a manufactured hill. It's a mound in Grant Park. It's the only sort of mound pretty much in Chicago. But this was supposed to be where General Logan was supposed to be buried. He's not buried here.
He's not buried. That's why they don't really call Logan's tomb anymore. It's just a Logan statue. That's why we have this hill here.
How did we react to that news? How did Chicagoans know? I think this happened in 2019, and we had dropped, I don't know, millions of dollars into a tomb, and then they decided not to come here. It'd be a huge scandal. Everyone would get bounced.
Well, Chicago, you got to remember, this was a rivalry between New York and Chicago. And shortly after that, Chicago won an even bigger prize. They got the prize for the Columbian Exposition, the 400th anniversary of Columbus's voyage.
So that eased.
That kind of eased the pain that we got that one. We won up New York on that one. So the general stayed where he is in Chicago. We've had to make do with honoring with Logan Boulevard and Logan Square and Logan Elementary School, community area, Logan Theater, and
many honors. I mean, I'm sure he's a war hero. I don't want to besmirch his reputation, but at the end of the day, the family said, we don't want to be in Chicago, yet we still named everything. I mean, we say Logan six times a day in Chicago, and he's not here.
Well, we could, you know, we could change enough names in this city. We're always changing names. We changed St. Petersburg to Leningrad and back to St. Petersburg.
This statue, for anyone in Chicago who's listening to this who hasn't been down here, or for tourists that come through, it's a must-see. It is an amazing piece of art for General Logan and the Battle of Atlanta. This is Logan's tomb. Unfortunately, he's not here. He never was. But a great piece of hidden Chicago, a hidden Chicago landmark. John R. Schmidt is our Chicago historian and our contributor to Extension 720. John, thanks for telling us the story of General Logan.
Okay.
Back to Extension 720 on 720 WGN.
Coming up, hip-hop artist Tokio part of the Save Money crew of the young Chicago rappers who kind of took over hip hop. And he put out his first record in, what, 2015, Pete? And he had a follow up, and he's now producing new music in 2019. Sounds good. Get him to perform a little in a performance studio. That's coming up here on Extension 720. And like you said, post game with Hampo, B, and Kaz, Mark Carmen coming up right after the Bears. Finish up with the Redskins in Washington right now. Score 28-9. The Redskins scored, but did not get the two-point conversion. So 28-9. Pete, you have a disgusted look on your face. You're that Bears fan. It's like, can't believe they let him score in the third quarter.
Well, you know, Eddie Pinheiro missed a kick.
Yeah.
I felt like they had momentum going, and now they lost in the second half.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. If it was 31-3, we would be like, who cares what happens from this point out? Once you get to like a 31-3, but you're right, a 28-3, let him back in with a touchdown. Hopefully Trubisky and company can keep the momentum going and at least take some time off the clock. Right. Yeah, interesting convo with John Schmidt about Logan's tomb. I did not know that. And I also, as much as I joke in that piece, listening to it, yeah, we use the word Logan a lot in Chicago. Logan Square, Logan Boulevard, Logan Downtown, Logan's everywhere. Gave this guy a lot of attention, and the fact that he did not, well, I guess he did, his family did not choose to bury him here in Chicago. We spent a lot of money. Think about the scandal. Think about all the Trib editorials today. It'd be about the Logan family who decided not to bring the body of General Logan to Chicago after we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I should have done some I should have got the microfiche out to see if there were any editorials written about the scandal. Was it a scandal?
Yeah. Seems like it was. It also... Yeah, I love just how out front the rivalry was with Chicago and New York City. That's great. Yeah. Today it's a little bit more, well, we're global. We're a global city. We don't spend too much time with the rivalry with New York City. But yeah, I feel like back then I was happy to see we were putting our money where our mouth was when it comes to the rivalry. Oh, yeah? You want to take Grant?
Yeah.
Oh, I spent so much money on this tomb for Logan. Let's make it Logan.
But he's not going to come there. What's that now? Yeah.
What now? Who cares? Is it bigger? Is it more expensive than New York? Then we win! I know, it's funny to think about. The Logan tomb is in the what is considered the central business district. That Mayor Lightfoot is talking about no marijuana dispensaries would be in the central business district of Chicago. She came out today. She had a big press conference. She said, well, that's just the beginning. You know, we just want to talk about this. But I thought it was really interesting because she shaped the narrative in a way that I'm not sure that I was ever thinking this way. But she kind of like threw shade at the critics who are like, I know the rich and wealthy want all the dispensaries, but I'm giving them to the neighborhoods. This is kind of a weird way to play it. Like this idea that downtown Chicago, for whatever reason, the reason that everyone is scratching their head about why she chose not to put dispensaries downtown had to do with all these rich fat cats getting all the marijuana money. I didn't think about it that way at all. I thought it was probably more about, and I don't, maybe this is her way of misdirecting. But I thought it had everything to do with, not unlike what we saw with the president this past week when he talked about homelessness in San Francisco and what I saw firsthand in Seattle about the I guess, the relationship between dispensaries and marijuana and people who live on the street for whatever reason. And you're seeing it in San Francisco and you're seeing it in Seattle. You're seeing it a little bit in LA and other places, too, where there just seems to be an abundance of people who live on the street and marijuana use. And it changes the, I don't know what the best way to say this, it changes the impression from tourism. And I think that, you know, as the marijuana laws and states adapt and evolve from and the evolution of the first states that adopted in Colorado or California, You see the next wave of states saying, I don't like cherry picking what they like and what they don't like. Well, you know what? With that comes an element. Yeah, we don't want a bunch of people just hanging out in front of the dispensary. And as I saw and I talked about in this program, when I went to Seattle for my summer vacation with my family, I saw firsthand a correlation between the dispensaries and people who lived on the streets and just an unbelievable amount of actual public smoking. So it was just it reeked of marijuana everywhere you went, in the downtown little stretch in front of Pike's Market there. And I know that there are laws so you can't smoke in public, but I think at a certain point, what are the cops going to do? What are the it's like, what are you going to do, ticket me? And then, okay. So I thought from the get-go, when I saw that she was going by zones and she didn't want to put it downtown, that the real reason was to protect tourism downtown, to not have that kind of element that would be all over Michigan Avenue and State Street and other places. It'd be they would kind of keep it sort of smoke-free in front of the Chick-fil-A on State, Randolph, Lake Street. And I think a lot of people, and that's what I was reading on Twitter, was saying, this sounds like you want that element. You don't care what happens in Humboldt Park. You don't care what happens in the zones, the other six zones or seven zones that you set up. You just want to protect downtown. But I thought it was interesting today she spun it the other way, saying, no, I'm punishing downtown, you rich, elite one percenters that live downtown. You're not going to get your grubby money hands on this money, this awesome amount of money that was ended up being like $10 million a year, but so much money. I was just surprised by that.
I was too. And are we dumb in thinking this, or what were most people thinking along our lines?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, because you see the Alderman Riley, and you see some of the business owners in this area saying, well, you know, don't we want, essentially talking about, don't we want the money that would be generated from tourism when it comes to recreational marijuana? Don't we want tourists being in dispensaries buying weed and the tax of that going, like, that's who's going to be buying it? And it seems to me that, I guess that's an interesting thought. Mm-hmm. So yeah, wouldn't you want people just not unlike casinos? We talk about casinos being downtown. And so I thought that was what they were talking about. But to sort of categorize them or put them in, sort of shape the narrative to act like they're these rich downtowners aren't going to get these are for the neighborhoods. Neighborhoods are going to benefit from this. I don't know. On first glance, it's a hard one for me to swallow. I'm not sure if that's how I see it. And I guess you can make an argument saying if there is financial, and I guess it would be the people who get the dispensary licenses we're talking about, small business financial opportunity for people who otherwise wouldn't be thought about to get the dispensary in the old Apple store on Michigan Avenue. Yes, you can make that argument. But to say that's the reason why you don't want dispensaries downtown, I feel is a little disingenuous. I feel like it's all about protecting the sanctity of Michigan Avenue and the cash cow that is downtown Chicago from an element that has creeped up in other major cities that probably was not thought of. That at the time when they legalized marijuana, they didn't think that that was going to be an issue, that it would deter tourism, that people wouldn't want to go to these cities because they don't want to deal with the element that's around that. And I would have more respect for the mayor to come out and just say that. The mayor came out and said, listen, Michigan Avenue, we want tourists up and down here. We don't want like just plumes of marijuana smoke everywhere. Sorry, that's not what we want. That's not the future direction we want to see of our downtown Chicago. Put it in Humboldt Park. put it in Lakeview. There's so much room in Lakeview. East Lakeview, West Lakeview, any part of Lakeview. You can have it. So we'll see how that shakes out. All right, more to come here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, coming up, we're going to talk with Tokio, the hip-hop star from Chicago who has got new music out. And as a matter of fact, you don't really think about WGN and Extension 720 as a place to debut new music, but here it is, the first time you'll hear this song. This song is called Water to It. It's Tokio. I jump in the deep end. Ain't nobody gonna hold your hand, don't worry about me, just say yourself. I keep that old L, you could catch a fade. But that be foolish, yeah, I'm Stevie Wonder to the hate. I'm water to it, I be water, water, I ain't tripping now. They be flipping just like corn.
trap, 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 yeah. Hit me with the guys, I ain't credit card scamming. Hit that bitch blast, then I split it with my man, yeah. Everybody eats, yeah, I learned that from the family. I slay that song, yes, to the stars, yeah. They say our dreams and money far-fetched, but I'm a dog, yeah. We get this in, it's like a ball that we make this fish. Born ready to stay out the way, cause they ain't know when they shoot. I said today, yeah.
Welcome back to Extension 720 and 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, Chicago hip-hop artist Tokyo is in studio with us. You may know him from his album Wave Theory, which is now available on all digital streaming services. And he's got new music, including the single Billy, which has been released, and new music we just heard. Tokyo, thanks for being in the studio. Good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So this is the time where the creative time for you, because you have been busy in the studio. You're ready to release all this stuff. How does it feel to be ready to release new music to the world?
Exciting, mostly because I'm coming from a place of experience now. You know, I'm a lot more experienced in my craft. Everything's just getting more fine-tuned, and I think that it's going to show through in the work.
When you think about the evolution, you mentioned Wave Theory, and that was really coming out of the Save Money crew into that. There was a lot of, oh, who's this guy? And this is amazing work. How have you evolved? To think of it's been 4 years now, and you've put out other work, but how does this music compare, and how have you evolved as an artist?
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's technique, mentally and spiritually. You know, just evolving as a human. And then that's where I draw the inspiration from. I just draw inspiration from life. So Wave Theory, I was just a young kid, like, looking at the moon and seeing all these, you know, everything's connected, the water and, you know, kind of all these theories, very theoretical. Then, you know, the last album, Worldwide Wave, I was able to articulate a shift in consciousness even by going up 90,000 feet, you know, and, like, what's after that? And what I realize is there's nothing for us out there. And everything that is for us is inside of us. So that's where I'm at now, is not looking out anymore. I'm more looking isolated inward, yeah. And looking inward, you know.
And I think that you see this more and more in hip-hop these days. But you are the creator, meaning not just the lyrics, but the music that we hear. You collaborate with a lot of producers. But the concepts and even the beats that we hear are coming from you. Is that something you had to learn as a hip-hop artist? Or is that something that's just innate with you since you started in high school?
I'm thankful for my network of people I've been surrounded and learned to make music with. Because when you first start as a rapper, you go into the studio, it's just a track, you got the beat, and then you rap your verse, and then you put ad-libs, three tracks. I had musician friends around me, and also engineer friends who would show me, oh, there's more, you can add more tracks to make it sound good, or you can add this part of the beat. And then so then when I learned that, I was like, I'm not being able to articulate my sound fully just with the limits of the verse and the ad-libs.
I need
to be able to create the whole bound. So that's where I was forced to kind of.
You have been doing more and more music with live instrumentation, a band behind you, and you're doing much more in that regard. Is that part of expanding, as you just mentioned, just the idea of learning more about the technique of being a good producer?
Yeah, and music as well. Like, I came in making a lot of electronic dance music, and I think all music should make you dance, you know, and at this point it's kind of, everything is kind of electronic and digitalized, so it's all the same. I just don't have to stay in a certain mold of quote unquote electric dance music. I can make music, make people dance with using regular instruments. That's what they used to do back in the day, mm-hmm. You know, James Brown, Stevie, you know, it's basically taking it back to the basics. And when you can hit it with the basis, then you know you have good work. You know, there's no gimmicks around it. It's just music.
It's funny to say that music is, you know, all music should make you dance. And I think about a lot of your video work and a lot of the music. Dance is a big part of what you, even Billy, the new mm-hmm. track, that's all about dance. Why is dance a big part of who you are and the music you produce?
It's so crazy because I just thought about the meaning of dance. And it kind of gets categorized, but I feel like it's the fullest version of free expression. Because when a person's dancing, they really don't care what anybody's thinking. And you see that people are the most happy when they're dancing. So out of all the emotional spectrum that I could choose to lock in on, that's the one I love. I want to make people feel free and liberated. Like the word dancing and liberation almost are like synonymous. They like, you know, when you see somebody really dancing, you're like, man, that person is doing their thing, you know, and any chance I can grab onto that emotion and spread it, like, you know, that's what I want people to remember me. Like, they don't remember anything you say. They just remember how you made them feel. Yeah. So out of all the emotional spectrum, Tokyo made me feel liberated. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we are talking with Tokyo here on Extension 720. New tracks coming out. Billy is out. And also, Wave Theory out on digital streaming services. And why that's a big deal is because when Wave Theory came out in 2015, it was really sort of the first, your first solo project coming out of Save Money. Mm-hmm. And there was a real ethos or a theory around the idea that you weren't going to put the music on Apple or Spotify or other places. This was, you're going to find it on my SoundCloud page and that's it, right? Yeah. And that was really what all the guys that came out of Save Money were doing. Mm-hmm. That's changed in 4 years. But does that mean that the corporate giants of music have won?
I would say that it definitely changed. And they were losing the grips of it, and they regained it with the DSPs. So now, but the one thing that they don't have a hold of is distribution, because now it's as simple as loading your music up, and now you don't need a label to print out CDs.
Yeah, you can write to Spotify. Yeah. You don't even need to worry about it. Yeah,
so
right.
Then there it's up to the artist to do their promotion. But when it comes to, you know, the corporates grabbing up, yeah, they got it, and you know, there's playlists and things that there's 50,000 songs every Friday, so your music gets buried unless you're special.
That's, you know, 50,000 songs are uploaded to Spotify or Apple Music every Friday.
Yeah.
How do you compete with that as a musician today? Because that's really the only way people are going to grab your music. And you have a following in Chicago, and you're known, but how do you compete with 50,000 other artists trying to get the same thing?
Well, especially in such a saturated market of music sounding the same, me personally, I just cut through. Like, there's not another song that sounds like my song ever in that 50,000. And then on top of the fact that I do the visuals and the videos, and I direct them with my homie Todd. And that's what I feel like separates ourselves. What separates my brand is that I'm trying to create the whole embodiment of the art, you know, versus the section. Because it's like now it's like almost like music's not enough anymore.
Yeah, right, know? Right. Well, it's funny because we talked, I think it's 4 years now. You came on. I remember we did the interview when you were about to do the big Metro show. And outside of music, how have you dealt with the fact that people know you more and that you have a little bit of local celebrity, if not hip-hop celebrity, and you put out music, they write about you, something else happens, you write about you. How do you deal with the celebrity of being one of the Save Money crew?
I feel like with success, what I've learned is with success comes the burden of eyes, and sometimes they're not always good eyes, they're evil eyes. But the way that I've been dealing with it recently, or just moving forward, is I've been so crazy because I've been trying to remove myself from my ego in every situation. So I like to be complete. Like, you'll catch me walking down the street by myself and you'll be like, damn, like, that's Tokyo. Yeah, it's me. What's up? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's good? Okay. If you're a fan, or even if you're not, like, nice to meet you. Keep it moving,
right.
You know, and I feel like that is what's going to it embodies me even more, you know, like I feel like Donald Glover, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could see him just walking just randomly, or even Frank Ocean, like, you know, like, these guys are really, they create this whole idea of celebrity around them, but most people who are famous, they just want to be regular.
Yeah.
And if I don't feed into it, then I could be regular the whole time.
Yeah, right.
You know, and just continue to be dope with art and allow people to appreciate my art. But if I don't feed into that concept, then I don't have to worry about it, because people start to respect you. They're like, oh, that is Tokyo. I'm not going to bother him right now. He's doing something. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I got to bring up the fact that this has been a tough year for you. At the beginning of the year, you were in Pitchfork and a lot of different places, not for your music, but for an accusation, a sexual assault accusation that was levied against you on Twitter. What do you want to say to your fans about that experience?
I'd like to say, you know, God bless all the women that have been through situations of, you know, of those sorts, and you know, God bless them and made everything that they need. But my situation wasn't that, and it hurt the most because we live in a society where you can say anything you want on the internet and there's no repercussions, and also, like, public opinion is more valued than due process. And it was a hard situation for me because I just had to deal with it. Like, you know, I just had to deal with it. And moving forward, like, it allowed me to take a step back and analyze the people I had around me, the situations I were in, and to just be more conscious of all of that, you know, because I don't need to be moving around in lower frequencies and, you know, even entertaining certain situations. So I just had, you know, I just grew from it. And it was very, it was a blessing in disguise because I needed to take the step back, especially going into the next section of my career and the next chapter where it's like, okay, are you really, you know, how do you cement yourself? You know, and yeah. I was able to take the step back and really realize what I am and who I am, you know, and what I represent. And that's the most important thing to me, is inspiring the people.
The hip-hop has a strange and long and storied and negative track record when it comes to women. Mm-hmm. Misogyny and all sorts of terrible things that come out of the hip-hop community. When you get lumped in with that, do you feel like you have a different perspective of how hip-hop has treated women in the past?
I do. What I feel like is, you know, you're a product of your environment, most of us. And what we don't realize, we've subconsciously been programmed with all of these things. Even the women have been programmed. So now that I've noticed it and that I've noticed what comes from it, I have to make the decision on whether I'm going to not continue to feed into it and then oppose it. And I have, you know, like, there's a lot of decisions I made in songs, like, oh, I'm gonna take this word out, or let me take this bar out, you know, like, it's just like, I think about, if there's a problem that's bigger than any one person, you don't just keep feeding into it. You got to be the change. And I think that, you know, I think that me and my friends are that. We're grown now. We can't just be talking all reckless. Like, the kids listen to us, so we have to set the right example.
Right, right. And that's a great way to end this too, because you had Lane Tech Kid, Chicago Kid, Save Money was such a big collective that had done so much for hip hop. But the whole idea was you were these great Chicago kids that were coming up that were talking about Chicago in ways that others weren't. And there was just a lot of popularity around it because people really wanted to identify. You're a lot older now. It's been a while, right? Mm-hmm. So do you still feel that connection to Chicago and to what you guys were doing with Save Money?
It's 100% more amplified. And that's why we have to make certain decisions as men, even in the music industry, to not choose to feed into certain beasts, you know? And people are going to make their decisions and have their opinions about, you know, the way the art comes out. But, you know, at the end of the day, now, the way I think about it is, when I'm gone, what are they going to be able to hear from me? What game am I putting them on? I don't want to put them on to, like you said, the whole stereotype of what hip-hop has already been, you know? I want to put them on to new concepts and, you know, inspiring concepts versus, like, surface level, you know.
Tokyo's my guest, and he's got new music out. Billy is a single. There's more to come. Yeah. And also Wave Theory, which is an awesome record, which used to only be found on SoundCloud, is now across the digital providers, Apple, Spotify, and the like. We got the microphone here. I would love to hear something. What if you got a thought, what would you play here?
I'd probably play Heaven Only Knows or some.
Such a great song, man. Yeah. Thanks for being here, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks. That's why I love it, I love it, love it, I love it, love it, I love it. That's why I love it, I love it, love it, I love it, love it, I love it. Love it, I love it. Yeah. So soulful, don't you agree? Love it, I love it, love it, I love it. Yeah. That's why I love it, I love it. We back. Yeah. Look, my girl trippin', say I treat her like a groupie, but I never took a groupie out to eat.
See, I've been ballin', I've been poppin', I've been bubblin', I've been buzzin' in my city. Women love me, think I'm pretty, and they confirm it whenever they see me in person. If I said it, I meant it, I said it on purpose. Don't sleep on that furnace, cause boy, we hot. And if my job to make them think and make music that you feel, then these songs make them sing like, I guess we never know what we need to know or where we need to go. Mind the right field like I'm Ichiro. I shed light, they need to grow up for more. They friends, they cough up your rip, up your blog. It save money, we an army full of generals. Here to push the envelope and change what they think. It's my job to make them think and make music that they feel. So these songs make them sing like,
where the ever go? So I love it, I love it, love it, I love it, love it, I love it. So I love it, I love it, love it, I love it, love it, I love it. So I love it, I love it, love it, I love it, love it, I love it. If I drop it, they gonna cop it. I might start a not-for-profit. My papa say chance, but I am so proud of you. Like my beast, they made all of them. Keep my feet on an alderman. I just might run for alderman. You got power too. Seek that rap, put a message in. It's that sugary medicine. Feel like the intro, but better than it's ever been. Jumping like checkers, clever like chesses. Smoking like purpose, perfect like surface. Deeper than surface, anxious and nervous. The world isn't flat, it's sharp as a circus. I'm starving like sharks, it's just looking for service. I'm not in the industry, not in the service, not in the retail. Not in my noggin, neglecting the detail. I'm only beginning, behold magnificence. Rasking black boy with his red hair, friends tall and omnipotent. You choke like cinnamon, you broke up in a minute. Try that cinnamon, why not seven? That's your name up there, boy.
Heaven only knows. How about that? That is a great song. Tokyo featuring Chance the Rapper, as we heard right there. Of course, Tokyo live here, but Chance on tape. Tokyo with new music out now. Check it out. And more to come. We'll take a break here in Extension 720 and check in on the Bears game and also get ready for the post game with Hamp, OB, and Kaz. Stay with us. All right, paying attention to Bears football as the game's getting close to wrapping up, and that means our post game coming your way. Hampo, B, and Kaz, Mark Harmon take over after us, probably around 10:15, 10:30. We'll figure out how it all plays out here on 720 WGN. But the Bears holding on right now, but not as decisive as it was in the first half, as the Redskins have pretty much dominated the second half of the game. But Bears still have a comfortable lead. It could get less comfortable as the Redskins are driving. Stay with us. Extension 720 for a couple more minutes before the post-game show takes over at Hampo, B, and Kaz. Mark Carmen running the point, if you will. 312-981-7200. If you have thoughts on tonight's Bears game, which the Bears look to be wrapping up, it's always scary to say that with 3 minutes to go, but right now a nice commanding, what is that, a 13-point lead?
Yeah, 13 but 3 minutes is like 20 minutes in football time.
Well, the Redskins only have one timeout left. I'm sorry, the DCs.
The DCs.
The DCs only have one timeout left, so they can only stop the ball at the two-minute warning one more time. So this may actually go faster than you think if the Bears can muster up one more first down or maybe even Maybe even we'll see. But anyway, the Chicago Bears look to have escaped Washington with a victory after a commanding 28-3 halftime lead. Yeah. They end up with a 28-15 lead with 2 minutes to play here. Not a huge fan of how they played in the second half. The defense seemed to maybe be a little lethargic, although they did force a turnover, two of them. But not Mitch Trubisky, who had really worked hard in the first half to silence critics, in the second half threw a pass at the goal line that would have obviously cemented the game that you don't even see in high school. I mean, it was just not a good pass. I'm sure Adam Hoge and the guys, Hampo being Kaz, will talk about it. But the interception on the goal line, which is a fade route, and Allen Robinson had beaten his corner, he just underthrew it. Like way, and I don't even know what he was doing. So just the kind of thing where maybe he thought it was windier in the stadium. I don't know, but not a good interception to throw on the goal line when you're trying to put a team away. So maybe a learning lesson for a third-year quarterback? Third?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does he have small hands? Like Rex Grossman always had small hands.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's
he's super tall, but then has small hands.
Maybe it's a sexy Rexy problem. Yeah.
I know there's some injuries. So I saw Akeem Hicks walking off.
Yeah, there are some injuries. I'm sure the guys will talk about that coming up. Akeem Hicks, Taylor Gabriel as well, looked like he left the game with maybe it'd be concussion protocol. They took his helmet, as Adam Hull reported on Twitter. They took his helmet and he walked to the sideline. Also, limited ending here for a couple of guys. I didn't see Anthony Miller out there. I didn't see Trey Burton out there. The question is, as the NFL season motors along, I don't think we're going to get as lucky as we did last year when it came to injuries. And there were so many great Chicago Bears who were able to step up late in the season because they were still healthy. And even though that the injury bug kind of bit us in the butt in the playoffs, where we did not have Eddie Jackson or Trey Burton, which probably would have changed the outcome of the course of that game. Again, it looks like tonight's victory will come at a cost. Hopefully it is limited when it comes to injuries. Brad Biggs from the Tribune said knee injury on Akeem Hicks. So we shall see. Never like it. But maybe... Knee injury, it's not basketball. Knee injury is probably a basketball thing. The kicker's got a mild knee injury, Eddie Pinheiro.
Remember when Anthony Rizzo had, we thought he was going to have a broken foot?
Right. And then high ankle sprain. He's back in a game, right?
Yeah.
To then completely implode and give away a four-game set. That was nuts. What a weekend, man. You were at that game? You were at Saturday's game?
Too bad Craig Kimbrell wasn't sidelined.
Were you at the game then where Kimbrell gave up the back-to-back home runs?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
There was a game.
What was that about?
There was a game a few years ago, 2008, 2009, when they were good, where, well, maybe it's before then. I don't remember. But it was like they were competitive, and they were playing the Rockies, and they were winning, and everything was great. And then Bobby Howery came in. Our former White Sox Cubs pitcher Bobby
Never
Howery
really
came in and gave up a home run or something that blew the lead. And then a guy came out from the stands to want to beat up Bobby Howery. Yeah. He ran to the mound to punch Bobby Howery. I felt like after Craig Kimbrell gave up that second home run, I felt like somebody is going to, we got to be careful. Thanks God the Nets are up. And I felt like somebody was going to come on and run out to the field to try to punch Craig Kimbrell.
Oh my god!
It was not. It was
that's how it felt.
Yeah, it was ugly.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Well, not to you don't want to ever see that, but I mean, Craig Kimbrell, that was just not a.
He's not very good.
Well, to have that kind of that performance in such an important series for the Cubs, and we were talking about it on the Lower Wacker Live podcast today. Just the concept that. I mean, Joe Maddon put his team in a position to win. They could have won 3 out of 4 of those games.
Mm-hmm.
The first game, I think, was Friday night. Thursday night, we were on the air, and we were watching that game, and Kimbrell gave up the solo homer after they had rallied back. That was such a moment. He gave it away. Then to look at Saturday, and then because they couldn't go to Kimbrell anymore, you had to go Yu Darvish for 9 innings?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't have any faith in his bullpen that he had the starter stay out there.
Yep.
With a one-run lead? in the rain like that. That's great. That's unheard of.
100 pitches.
There's nothing you can do in that situation because who are you going to go with that's going to shut the door? That was an awful, awful showing for Chicago sports this weekend. I mean, the White Sox played great. And I have a lot of – I am looking forward to Eloy Jimenez, 30 home runs, youngest in the Sox history to hit 30. Yoan Moncada is playing lights out. Abreu and Anderson are still leading or if at the top of their offensive categories. They just can't pitch. But I have more excitement about the future of the White Sox than I do the future of the Cubs. That was I don't know which one I like less or more. I feel like maybe knowing that the Sox are not competitive by July, you're like, well, enjoy it. To watch this implosion, I don't know, man. I did not like that at all.
And it makes it worse when you're at the game and you have no faith in Craig Kimbrell.
Right.
And he's blown many games, including the game on Thursday. And he comes in, they play the dumb Guns N' Roses song super loud, and they paste his picture with his dumb beard on the big, you know, like on the video board, and you're like, I don't like this guy. And then he gives up in a couple
back
home
to
runs.
Back on first pitch, right? And it didn't help me either because I'm in my fantasy baseball championships, and the guy I'm going against is Yadier Molina, and all he did was he's just a Cub killer, and all weekend long. So not good for the Chicago Cubs, who will be on the outside looking in for the playoffs. Eddie Pinheiro comes in, kicks a field goal to seal the deal here, hopefully, for the Bears. The Redskins have no timeouts left, and with a minute 50 to go, are going to get the ball back. But it seems like it might just be, you know, a couple of Hail Marys, and they'll be out. And then we'll get to our post game here on 720 WGN. Hamp, OB, and Cos.